Welcome to the Razor's Ink podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. The debate for GOAT, greatest of all time, can be about sports, movies, TV, music. It can be about pizza. But like discussing politics, rarely do you find agreement, and the debate will rage on, no one ever really satisfied with the discussion. But what if there was a better way of consideration? So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, a new way to approach debates about music. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
Who was the better musical group, the Beatles or Rolling Stones? Ah, I got your attention. It's impossible to measure better or best because it's subjective, but in your next debate, you might consider context. What is context? Start by asking who they are. Where are they from? What are they writing and singing about? And when? We'll narrow down our focus to a pivotal breakout period for both bands, 1964 to 1968. Listen and attempt to understand context. Listen to I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles in 1964. Oh, please say to me, you'll let me be your man. And please say to me.
And please say to me, you'll let me hold your hand. Now let me hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand. And when I touch you, I feel happy inside. It's such a feeling that my love I can hide.
The lyrics are sweet, cute, romantic, and non-threatening. Perfect for American listeners in 1964 America. Now, let's listen to Mother's Little Helper by the Rolling Stones, 1966. What a drag it is getting old.
What a drag it is getting old. Men just aren't the same today. I hear every mother say they just don't appreciate that you get tired. They're so hard to satisfy. You can tranquilize your man. So go running for a shelter of a mother's little helper. And for help you through the night, help to minimize your flight. Doctor, please, some more of these.
Jagger and Richards are writing about the dirty secret nobody was talking about behind closed doors in 1966 America. See the movie 1 year later in 1967, Valley of the Dolls, which has Patty Duke and Sharon Tate playing characters succumbing to barbiturate addiction. In these two examples, I submit, and ladies in particular, the songwriters are speaking to you romantically in the first song, but honestly in the second. Context. Not getting it? Here's another example. The Beatles, Yellow Submarine, 1966.
In the town
where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea.
And he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed on to the sun till we found the sea of green. And we lived beneath the waves in our yellow.
This is prose poetry, heavy on imagery, percussion, and harmony. It's tremendous writing by Lennon and McCartney. What were the Stones singing about? 1 year earlier, in 1965, the Stones introduced I Can't Get No Satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction.
I tried, and I tried, and I tried, but I
Mick and Keith are singing about every guy's frustrations about dating in 1965. Raw, uncensored, threatening in its desperation. It resonated then and today, timeless. Luscious prose poetry in the first song, and sexual frustration in the second song. Two songs, 1 year apart, both British bands. Context. The Fab Four was the band listened to with your folks, but the Stones were the bad boys your parents warned you about. I submit both bands were singing to different constituencies. The Beatles' prose resonated with young female hearts, and the Stones' sexual infatuation and frustration resonating with young men. Here's the skinny. The chicks were digging the Stones just as much as the guys, if not more. We know you ladies love bad boys, as evident in the good girl falling for the bad boy in reality, literature, film, television, and music. Context. I can lay out context even more clearly in bands who cover the Beatles song. The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, 1967. It was 20 years ago today, Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play. Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play. They've been going in and out of style, but they guaranteed to raise a smile. So may I introduce to you, active number all these years, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. In my opinion, it's a very clever theatrical composition with harmony and orchestra, including commanding horns, heavy bass, and canned laughter from an audience dubbed in. You can imagine yourself sitting ringside at some circus somewhere. It's a team effort, however, I contend. Here's what I mean. Jimi Hendrix covered Sgt. Pepper just 2 days after Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was released, with Paul McCartney in the audience. Jimmy was a black guitar player with Seattle roots covering the most successful rock and roll band of the 60s while inventing psychedelic rock. What balls! Not a team effort, but a lone wolf interpreting the Beatles song from his personal perspective or context. It would have been cool for another Seattle area musician, Kurt Cobain, to cover Sgt. Pepper's. What do you think? Check his cover, And I Love Her, by the Beatles. What context would Kurt provide? Still need more context? Hey Jude, The Beatles, 1968.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better.
Paul McCartney showed up to the studio prepared to leave no meat on the bone. He's hitting those high notes accompanied by cool chorus from his bandmates and magical musical arrangements. It's charismatic. Now, hold on to your seat and listen. Wilson Pickett on vocals and Duane Allman on guitar covered Hey Jude in 1968.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her in your heart, then you can start
make it better.
It's as if we're in the front pew in some Muscle Shoals black church, blown away by Pickett shouting to the heavens, with Allman's guitar serving as a revved-up church choir. Let's review context. Hendrix and Pickett were black American artists covering the Beatles, hailing from Liverpool. Think about context in terms of race and geography. Seattle, Alabama, and Nashville in particular. It's not lost on me both the Beatles and the Stones were influenced by American R&B singer-songwriters. You might ask yourself, why cover already great music from the Beatles? The greatest musicians appreciate great lyrics and want to grapple with them, get into the mud, wrestle, understand, and kiss them with personal interpretations born from their hearts and reared from their personal experiences or context. How do you think McCartney and Lennon felt about the coverage? I'd like to think they basked in the glory of having their luscious lyrics covered and fat royalties paid. We'll never know. If you're paying attention, you'll notice I didn't talk about anybody covering Rolling Stones songs. I respectfully submit, nobody had the balls to cover the Stones. Can you really see anybody other than Mick and Keith belting out their lyrics? Now that I think of it, a group named Devo covered I Can't Get No Satisfaction. I stand by my point. It takes balls to cover Stones lyrics, particularly when dressed in kooky costumes. Did you ever hear a cover of this beautiful song?
I've been all around this great big world, and I've seen all kind of girls. Yeah, but I couldn't wait to get back in the States, back to the cutest girls in the world. I wish they
Brian Wilson and Mike Love, 1965, California Girls, The Beach Boys. A Southern California band singing about California. Context. Can you imagine anybody covering California Girls? I can't. Yeah, David Lee Roth, he's a California boy beginning his career in a Pasadena garage not far from my home. And a hell of a charismatic artist, so I'll give him a pass. But his coverage doesn't come close to the original. For the record, pun intended, as a kid in the 60s, I owned Meet the Beatles and Magical Mystery Tour albums. I didn't own a single, pun intended, 45 or album by the Stones. I revered Magical Mystery Tour, captivated by the album cover, and I'm aware of the seminal post-production advances made in the studio. A final nod to the Beatles. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and kings like Hendrix, Pickett, and Allman playing your lyrics is flattery of the highest order, lads. There's no right or wrong answer to which band was the best, just a suggestion I'm offering you on how to assess music. Apply context. I suggest Mick and Keith were singing to us about the realities of life, whereas Paul and John were singing about the beauty of life. Context isn't limited to rock and roll. The producer and sound editor of this podcast, Sean, is an expert in classical music. I contend that context is evident when I hear different conductors orchestrate great symphonies. Do they sound the same? I argue not. How does a German conductor cover an Italian composer or vice versa? Can you even tell? I'm just beginning to hear the nuances after many decades of listening. Note to you conductors, show love, respect, kindness, and deference to those Italian composers who bridge symphonies to operas. And like Forrest Gump said,
that's all I have to say about that.
The point of this podcast is to get you thinking about context when the argument about best presents itself. Remember, context is as much about who you are and when and where you may be as it relates to music. For example, I listened a lot to the Beatles in the 60s and don't recall much of the Stones. As an adult and a writer, however, I have a love affair with the Stones' discography, particularly their mono recordings of the 60s and the 70s ballads, Angie and Wild Horses. In assessing music, there's no right or wrong answer, or is there? Gold and platinum albums are awards based on quantitative metrics, sales. Are the Grammys a better metric to judge which is best? I have a soft spot for the underdog. In this case, the Stones, who showed up second, and rather than imitate the Beatles, chose to write about everything people were thinking about, but wouldn't speak about it in public, as far as the 60s were concerned. It shouldn't go unnoticed the Stones are still touring and making bank. The Beatles broke up in 1970. Context. Until I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint, and class is dismissed.
And actually, Jonathan, rather than conductors, more distinctions can be readily found when comparing orchestras. No one does Beethoven like the Berlin Philharmonic. No one does Tchaikovsky like the Moscow. And no one does Copland quite like the New York Philharmonic. You know, context. Besides, the conductor is the one member of the orchestra that you don't hear. You've been listening to the Razor's Ink podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. There you'll find everything from drama to romance, something for every reader, including his short story, Cone of Uncertainty, recently published by the Seattle Star. That's jonathanfarini.com, Farini with two R's, one N. Or drop an email to razorsincpodcast@gmail.com.